Fantastic adventures of a double spy in this half hour of Monitor. Eddie Chapman, who was an agent for both sides during World War II. I'm Ted Steele, your Monitor agent, and I have music on my side right now. Jamie and the J. Sylvia Singers with You've Got Your Troubles.
I see that worried look upon your face. You've got your troubles, I got mine. Somebody else to take your place. You got your troubles, I got mine. I too have lost my love today. All of my dreams have gone away. Now just like you, I sit and wonder why. You got your troubles, I got mine. You need some sympathy, well, so do I. You got your troubles, I got mine. She used to love me, that I know. And it don't seem so long ago that we were walking, that we were talking the way. Forgive me if I seem unkind. You got your troubles, I got mine. I'd open another place another time. You got your troubles, I got mine. You got your troubles, I got mine. I'd open another place another time. You got your troubles, I got mine. You got your troubles, I got mine. You got your troubles, I got mine.
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola and a look at next week's action in the field of baseball.
Next Tuesday in Anaheim, California, the top players from the two major leagues will play the 38th All-Star Game. And what will happen is anybody's guess. The game is sometimes referred to as a spectacle. But over the years, a lot of things have happened in All-Star Games that could be called wild a lot easier than they could be called spectacular. The All-Star Game makes people think of big sluggers booming the ball. Okay. Who do you think drove in the very first run in All-Star history? There were no fewer than 12 Hall of Famers who saw action in that first game, but the first run batted in was credited to none other than that mighty batter, Lefty Gomez. There have been some weird things happening in All-Star games, like back in 1938 when Frank McCormick opened the seventh inning with a single off Lefty Grove. The next batter was Leo DeRocher, and he bunted. Jimmy Fox picked up the ball and threw it in the right field. Joe DiMaggio picked it up in the outfield and threw it over the catcher's head. DeRocher, who had sacrificed, wound up scoring on the bunt. In 1954, Dean Stone came in to pitch for the American League in the eighth inning. There were two men out, and Red Shandeen's on third base. When Stone went into his windup, Red tried to steal home, and he was out. The American League came up in their half of the eighth, trailing by a run. Larry Doby pinch hit for Stone and tied the game with a home run. The American League got two more that inning. Dean Stone was the winning pitcher, but he never retired a batter. In 1950, the National League won on a 14-inning home run by Red Shandeen. In that game, Larry Jansen pitched five innings, struck out six, and allowed only one hit. Years later, Roy Campanella was to say, "If I was to name the best pitcher I ever caught on a single day, I'd have to say it was Jansen in that game. There were no weak spots in that American League lineup, but he was the boss." It's funny how some players have done in All-Star competition. It's not a question of whether or not they're good ball players, because if they aren't, they spend the All-Star break at home. But somehow, some guys have done great in All-Star games, and others have done badly. Let's just look at guys who played in at least 10 games. Billy Herman hit .433. Brooks Robinson, Willie Mays, and Enos Slaughter have all hit over .350 in All-Star play. For Mays especially, the game has been a pleasure over the years. He's hit well and gotten a lot of important hits. On the other hand, take a guy like Eddie Matthews. He's played in 10 games, and that alone tells you what kind of a player he is, but the game has been a jinx for him. Eddie's All-Star batting average is less than 100, and he's made more errors than any player in the history of the game. Every player who ever appeared in an All-Star game has his own memories of it, and some of the superstars have lots of them. But one guy with a special memory has to be Mickey Owen. In 1942, Mickey Owen played in 133 games for the Dodgers and didn't hit a single home run. In the All-Star game that year, he went to bat once as a pinch hitter, and you guessed it, his home run was the only score for the National League that day. How do you think that tasted? This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
And the All-Star Game will be brought to you Tuesday on NBC Radio and Television. Joe Garagiola, of course, is brought to you every weekend on Monitor and Monday through Friday on NBC Radio. Leslie Bricus movie theme, You Only Live Twice. Nancy Sinatra's big song. The Fifth Dimension's hit in 1 minute on the Monitor Beacon.
Tonight, discover that fine dining has an international flavor at the New York Hilton. Drop over before or after the theater or when you go out on the town. Stroll down our promenade. You could find yourself in the exotic atmosphere of the mysterious East at a romantic lounge called Kismet. Here are cocktails fit for a pasha and usually tasty hors d'oeuvres. Only steps away is our Roman pub. Italian specialties served by mini toga-head waitresses. Gladiator-sized cocktails. Romantic dancing till the small hours. And there's our old bourbon steakhouse, New Orleans Riverboat Decor, delightful atmosphere serving the best steaks in town. Wherever in the world you want to dine tonight, try one of the wonderful restaurants in the New York Hilton, 53rd Street and the Avenue of the Americas. For reservations, call 212-JU-6-7000. That's 212-JU-6-7000.
The Come Alive sound on the Big Voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
At 18 past the hour, it's time to go up, up, and away on monitor with the Fifth Dimension Group.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together, you and I.
Double agent is what Eddie Chapman was in World War II, and he has medals from both sides to prove it. Now his adventures have been made into a movie called Triple Cross, and his story is stranger and more exciting than any fictional spy adventure. He was interviewed for Monitor by reporter John Cannon.
Eddie, what were your activities before World War II?
I was a safecracker, and I performed in England. Scotland Yard had, I think, 45 safes. Were put down to me.
So you were a good safecracker, if we can use the word good.
Well, at least I never got caught in Britain. I was caught later on the Channel Isles. I was a fugitive from British justice. Scotland Yard came over. I jumped out of a hotel window. Unfortunately, I'd left my money behind. I broke into the Palm Beach Casino on the island of Jersey. Later, after a manhunt, I was arrested, put on trial. I received a sentence of 2 years.
Well, just so everybody knows, you're not cracking safes today, are you?
Oh, no, I've retired. Well, I retired from the international scene 3 years ago.
Well, how did you become legitimate during the World War II?
Well, first of all, when my sentence expired, I demanded to see the German commandant, a man called von Stupnag. I told him that if the British ever came back to the island, I would be rearrested and put on trial for 45 charges of safe-breaking. And that I'd probably receive a sentence of between 15 and 20 years. I said I did not like the idea of doing 15 or 20 years. I'd prefer to work for the Germans. At a later stage, they had me arrested on a phony charge. They took me to a hostage camp on the outskirts of Paris, a camp which was portrayed in the film Triple Cross, called Romainville. And there, after some minor adventures, I was released. I was taken to a chateau in the center of France. I was put right through the German espionage school and trained in sabotage and general espionage work.
But then later you became a hero for Britain. How did you do that?
Well, I signed a contract with the German government. They parachuted me into Britain to blow up the aircraft factory, de Havilland's, who manufactured the famous Mosquito bomber. This was my first mission to Britain. I was parachuted into Britain. On arrival, I surrendered to the British. Fortunately, I'd managed to acquire two German codes. I stole them from the Germans. This was part of my bargaining basis with the British. I said to the British, if you're willing to forget the 45 charges and strike out my record, I work for you. They accepted this. I was then put through the British spy school, and I returned to Germany.
And you were decorated in both countries, weren't you?
Yes, for the sabotage of de Havilland's. The sabotage was actually done. We got permission from the war ministry to fake the sabotage. We blew the roof off, we blew the walls down. This again is a scene in Triple Cross, which is very well portrayed in the film. Armed with an elaborate cover story, I went back. After a period of time, because the Germans did me on a time interrogation, they were convinced I had actually done my mission. They gave me £30,000. But what was more important, they promoted me to Oberleutnant and gave me the Iron Cross.
What have been your activities since you retired as a safecracker and a World War hero?
Well, I went down to Tangier, and I lived in Tangier for 2 or 3 years, and I was smuggling in and out of Tangier. The good old days, we were smuggling. I had a yacht and an airplane down there. We were smuggling both gold and cigarettes.
Well, you had to have adventure, didn't you?
My circumstances seemed to push me. At a later stage, I met the Moroccan nationalists, and I participated in a coup to get the Sultan of Morocco at that time was exiled to Madagascar, and the Moroccan government offered me £100,000 if I could get him off Madagascar. Unfortunately, the coup misfired. The French sortie, who were very, very good, got onto this thing, and my boat was sabotaged in Toulon Harbor. In fact, she went up against the Richelieu. I lost a very good yacht.
And what are your activities right today?
At the present moment, I have an antique business. I have one in America.
Where?
I have one in Philadelphia.
And some people say Philadelphia is a dull city. It couldn't be with you there.
I have one in London, and we export from Britain to here. We deal mostly with the trade.
And then you had a club that was kind of famous, the Shenley Lodge, and the great British train robbery personnel, let us say, were supposedly using it. Is that right?
Yes, this was a large country club which I bought. It was an old Georgian house of 32 rooms, and it stood in some 10-acre of land just on the outskirts of London. I had a membership of 5,000. I had politicians, and Aaron Bevan, when he was alive, was a member. I had writers. I had even your own Bob Mitchum. Beryl Ives was a member. Also, unfortunately, we had some of the elite of London's underworld, and among them were some of the men later arrested for the train robbery. The police knew that they frequented and often stayed for weekends at the club. So one bright day, they decided to raid me, and 2 days after the robbery, and it was rather like a bad B film. And then I had a meeting with one of the heads of Scotland Yard, and I explained my predicament. I said, look, I'm fed up with you coming and turning me over.
They knew you well, didn't they?
They knew
Scotland
me very
Yard.
Well. Anytime anything happened, it seemed to be me, and I was always up and in and out of Scotland Yard. I was rather like a yo-yo up and down there. Then they said, well, if you close this damn club of yours, we'll see what can be done. So I agreed. I went back. I closed the club. And since then, I haven't been bothered.
Eddie, you're an amazing person, and it is quite a joy to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Rogue makes good in a very big way. Super Safecracker leaves prison to become an astonishingly effective double spy and British war hero. That's Eddie Chapman, our guest, whose true but improbable adventures have inspired a movie called Triple Cross. And we do hope that film is as exciting as the story Mr. Chapman has told us. This is John Cannon for Monitor.
Eddie Chapman. Boy, he makes James Bond sound like a beginner, doesn't he, eh?
Thank you.
Henri René in the orchestra with Man of La Mancha, good music from Broadway. In Alpena, Michigan, you're listening on WATZ. Wherever you're listening, I certainly hope that you'll make it a Saturday night date every weekend. This is your Saturday night host, Ted Steele, for Monitor.
This is Monitor, the first and foremost radio service on the NBC Radio Network.